When I see your face, the
there's not a thing that I would change,
'cause you're amazing
just the way you are.
Alright, sorry, I totally forgot the lyrics to the song. Before we started, I told you, look, I don't know the lyrics. And you're like, let's Google. And I'm like, no, fuck that. Let's just start. And immediately caught out. But hello, hi, welcome. The show's name is Politics.
Although
I call it Politrics. And the title of this episode is Ricky Stanicky. My name is Presh.
My name is Dill.
And
welcome.
So, clean up from last week.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago, I said that we narrowly missed a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, I read an explanation, but I feel like I still don't fully understand it.
Okay.
Right? I said that a recession is a period of economic decline characterized by two quarters of negative GDP growth. But that is quite nebulous and like abstract.
Mm.
Right? What does it mean in real terms?
Mm.
It means that the shops make less sales, which leads to job losses, which means the unemployment rate goes up, which leads to less spending at shops, which leads to job losses. Mm. Right? You see
Vicious
the cycle. Yes. So the cycle has the potential to get out of control unless the government takes steps to break it with a stimulus package.
Mm.
This is a group of policies that the government implements to, you know,
inject the economy.
Yes, to get the economy cycle going again, right? Mm. So, for potentially one of the things they could do is lower taxes.
Mm.
So, the extra money you have, you go to the shop, so you spend it, and it stimulates the economy.
Mm.
They can lower the interest rate.
Mm.
So, this would be good for me.
Yeah,
but I pay a bond every month, right? If the interest rate goes down, my bond goes down.
Mm.
So, I'll have like extra money again to go to the shops to spend to stimulate the economy.
Mm.
The last thing that they can do is, you know, just give stimulus checks, like to unemployed people, to like poor people. They just give them money, and then the more they buy, the more it stimulates the economy, and more people can go to the shops, etc. So, you know, a recession is still pretty bad, but you know,
it would be nice to have some relief.
You know?
This would really break the cycle and help people.
It would.
Yeah.
But again, these are like middle class people.
Mm.
This doesn't really help the poor. A recession is very bad for the poor.
Mm.
So, yes.
But I heard someone like a pensioner saying that on a certain day, between a certain time, that Pick n Pay has like a pensioner's, you know, breakfast, lunch thing.
Yeah.
Where they can just, you know, come and have food and stuff. So I guess that's a sort of boosting of the economy, because I'd be more willing to shop and begin pay knowing that, and especially if I was a pensioner, I might be more inclined to go there.
Sure.
But I just thought that was an interesting thing.
That's more like just advertising or like, you know, doing a special. It's the same as having like 10 rand off juice or something, you know, it's to entice you to come in.
Well, they're paying for everything for these pensioners, so I'd like to think of it as they're just feeding the old people.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Which I just think is nice. I don't know if it relates to what's going to happen with the economy, but I thought about that.
Sure.
Mm.
So last week I said that the song Hero by Nickelback was probably made about Superman.
Mm.
In fact, it was made for the 2002 movie Spider-Man.
Oh.
So
even better.
Yeah, totally even got better. It wrong, but it's good to know that they didn't just make a song about a hero and you know, to just apply to everyone. It was a specific thing for a specific
but
movie.
Does it say something specific about being a spider?
I'm going to be honest, I only know the one line that I sang last week. They say a hero can save us. I'm not going to... And then I don't know the rest of the song.
So we're not going to be...
That's all I know.
No problem.
Sorry.
No problem.
Also, last week, I couldn't remember which two rates were linked. I think I said it was the interest rate and the repo rate, but it's actually the interest rate and the inflation rate, which is something I spoke about a long time ago on this podcast, that if inflation is going up, which means the shops are making things more expensive, they put the interest rate up So again, my bond goes up. That means I can't spend as much at the shops. So
it's terrible. Everything increases. When is it going to decrease? When is it coming to neutral?
Thank you.
When is it going to be an increase for good?
But the thing is, it's not just us. It's like a worldwide, there's a lot of economic problems going on.
Well, I'll vote for pressure in this position.
No, but it has to do with lots of like outside factors. Yeah. So, for example, COVID, that kind of fucked a lot of things up. The war in Russia, that fucked a lot of things up. The conflict in
the Middle East. We have blooming, budding fields. I don't know why we don't just grow some weed. All right. Give it to everybody.
This is your answer every week.
Use it. Let's just go, bro.
Grow some weed.
I mean, it can be turban.
It is a good idea.
Yeah, because it would really boost the economy, I reckon.
Yes, anyway.
But, yeah.
Last week, I wanted to speak about Praveen Gordon's retirement. But I didn't have enough time to do research.
Okay,
In fact, I called him our finance minister last week. And he hasn't been our finance minister since 2018. So, 6 years ago.
But he was at some point.
He was, but...
not anymore.
No. I should be, you know, on top of that. But it just shows how ignorant I am. But I did some basic Googling, and the position he's retiring from is the Minister of Public Enterprises. So this is the minister in charge of our public utilities such as Eskom and SAA.
Oh my God. This doesn't seem good.
Right. So he's had a long career in politics, although I call it politics. But I just want to focus on his last position and as Minister of Public Enterprises and ask two questions, right? First question is, did he do a good job? And by all accounts, no. Right? It's well known that Eskom has been mismanaged for years and he didn't do much to solve the situation. So I'm not going to blame him for Eskom.
But that's what it is, man.
I'm going to blame him for not doing anything to...
to help alleviate the situation. Thank you. Yes. You know? To make it better. To, you know, he didn't do anything actively to...
And not just Eskom, for all the... We have, I think, six public utilities, right? And my second question is, how did he feel about privatization? Do you know what privatization is?
When they're trying to make nice... I mean, when things should be public, but they privatize it and make extra money on it.
True. Yes, you caught it. Nice one, right? But why is it important to have public enterprises?
Because the public is everyone. Everyone should have the same rights and everyone should be...
Yes, thank you.
Get the same treatment and the... I mean, that's like, the premise of equality.
A private company, their main goal is to make money.
Yeah.
To make as much money as possible, right? So, in certain areas, that's good. You know, you want to maximize as much money as you can. But in other areas... incentivizing people with money is not the right way. Why do I say this? For example, with medicine, what would they, if they were doing it for money, what would they be incentivized to do? To cure you or to give you like a monthly drug that will like keep you sick but will slightly alleviate the pain. So in certain areas, you know,
it's not good.
It's not good to incentivize making money off people, because in certain areas we shouldn't be doing that, right? So that's why, like, one of my biggest things is we should have a public health, a strong public health sector, which we definitely do not have, right? So if our Minister of Public Enterprises is for privatization, that would be very bad, right? You, the person in charge of
public enterprises. Right?
Yes. So to answer that question, apparently he was all about privatizing. And so, there's theories that he didn't fix the public enterprises, hoping that, you know, he could justify selling them off. Right, because you'll be like, oh well, the public enterprises, they're in the shadow, let's sell them off to private interests.
But now, why can't the public enterprise buy a private enterprise?
They can,
and then make the private enterprise work for the public.
Well, it costs a lot of money,
but then in the long run,
the people will have to be willing to sell.
And then in the long run, why can't they do it sneakily? Like, I just rock up and I'll say, look, I'm presenting a private company, the private company being the government.
They can do that. They use a process called tenders.
Mm.
Instead of the government doing something, they'll ask for somebody to submit a proposal. So a bunch of businesses submit a proposal and then they choose which one
is the best.
Theoretically is the best one, but apparently there's a lot of corruption. Friend, you know? Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of corruption, so they don't necessarily choose the best one.
Mm.
And then they give money to that plan with that company and tell them to, you know, take care of this.
Mm.
So, yes. Anyway, so it's bad to privatize certain things, and this minister was very much for privatization, so...
Not a good public. Yes,
piss on his grave. Goodbye, bitch.
You are dead.
Get out of here.
Did he retire or did he die?
He retired, yeah.
Oh, okay, well...
But don't, I'm still pissing on his grave, yet. Bro.
Just wait for him to die, at least. Maybe, hopefully, he can see the error of his
ways.
That
being said, like, if you're rich, you usually, like, plan ahead and, you know, buy a plot on the cemetery. So I could probably... Well, I probably couldn't find it, but...
Nah, you could.
If I did some serious detective work, we'll find his grave and piss on it before he... before he dies.
Yo, bro, right. Just fertilize the soil one time.
All right. The other person who's retiring is Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Mm.
Right? I only saw a headline last week, and now that I read the story, he's actually seeking re-election... and will step down after that term in 2028. So I'll chat about him when he retires.
So he's not really keen to let go. he's like, I will soon, but like, not yet.
One more time, and then I'll...
Just
know,
one more.
You know, like a kid who doesn't want to go to bed.
For sure.
He's like, just one more game. Mm. That's him.
Mm.
All right. Can we get into the news for the week?
In the news this week, tell us.
Vodacom Group and former employee Kenneth Makate plan to enter private talks to discuss his compensation for a popular callback phone service he proposed more than two decades ago, hoping to reach an out-of-court settlement. A February majority judgment by South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal would entitle Makate to compensation ranging between 29 billion rand and 63 billion rand, which would have, quote, devastating consequences, unquote, for the mobile network operator, its employees, and its investors, the Johannesburg Vodacom said in papers filed February 26th to the Constitutional Court to appeal the SCA decision.
So, this guy has a secret, like, mobile network scheme, and he wants to sell
it
to...
It's not a secret. You've heard of Please Call Me, right?
Yeah.
He invented that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, they never paid him for it. So he's been suing them for like 20 years.
Oh, right? Shit.
And in February of this year, they judged that they have to give him a large amount of money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there was a... What's it when like you speak to investors?
Mm.
An investor call. Fucking hell.
On the investor call. They had to get all the people on the money. Yes,
the CEO of Vodacom was saying that this is not... possible, you know, they don't have that much money like on them to, you know, to just give this guy that money. So they're trying to work out a settlement with him so that they, you know, don't immediately go out of business. But this guy was complaining like, oh, we're gonna have to lay off our workers, we have to do this, that. It's like, you the one who didn't pay this man.
Yeah.
Right? You fucked this up.
Yeah, all right. Is it only Vodacom?
Yeah.
Oh, so he's going only for Vodacom.
He worked at Vodacom.
Oh, and he made it then.
Yeah, and he created the thing.
Oh.
And yeah.
Damn. Well, good on him, bro. And it must have been expensive to fight those legal battles.
I should clarify to our international listeners what a Please Call Me is. So if you don't
let me tell that, bro.
All right.
When a police call me is when you're struggling, you don't have no airtime. You know, I was in Australia, they call it phone credit. the thing that you use to call other people,
yeah,
you don't have any of it, bro. So you type in a number, *111*, and then you type in the number and then hash, and it sends that person a please call me, yeah, as in a message that says this person is looking for you, please call them at this number.
Yeah. So it's a very useful service that for sure, a lot of people make use of. So you know,
and it doesn't charge you anything.
I'm 100% on Makate's side. Obviously,
he deserves some money for that. Bro.
Yes, obviously, we don't want Vodacom to go under because, like that guy said, we have a lot of employees that rely on this business. But that man deserves the money.
He was
also
an employee, right? And he deserved. They should have just paid him from the beginning.
That's what I'm saying, right? You buy. Fucking over your employee down the line, you owe him billions, right? They deserve everything that's coming their way, right? So I'm reading this from onto our next story. I'm reading this from CNN, right? The public absence of Catherine, Princess of Wales, has grown from a niche royal watcher concern to an international punchline in a matter of weeks. While Kensington Palace said her January abdominal surgery was planned and indicated that she would be out of the public eye through March, several unusual details, grainy photos, an altered image, vague medical information, irregular updates from the British royal family have kept the public guessing. Have you heard about this? So Kate Middleton, formerly Kate Middleton, I don't know what her surname, I get Kate Windsor or whatever her name is, she's the wife of the prince, right? And she's been missing for a while. I heard this on a podcast, like, in January, right, that she hasn't been seen, etc. Now, in this past week, it was Mother's Day. It may have been 2 weeks ago, actually, but whatever the case is, instead of putting out a picture of her, they put out, like, a doctored picture. And
something they altered.
Yes, an altered picture, I should say. Right, and a number of magazines and newspapers, they're refusing to run the story because of that altered picture. So there's been a bunch of theories and, you know, the internet detectives kind of trying to find out what's up with the, right? But it seems very boring, if I'm being honest with you. It's like a lot of the theories are like, oh, she had surgery and, you know, like, The official story is that she had surgery and she wouldn't be able to be seen. But the theories that I'm seeing coming out is that, like, actually it wasn't an abdominal surgery. She was trying to get a bigger bum. She was getting a, I think it's called a BBL.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like a butt lift and things.
Yes. I was hoping for something like... she was kidnapped by terrorists and they're going to blow something up.
That would definitely be more interesting, bro.
That would be so much more interesting, but she's just been missing, so...
But, bro, is she even missing? They said that she did a surgery and now she's recovering.
But I'm saying nobody's seen her.
But they also said that...
The royal family said that. We don't know what's happening behind the scenes. She could be dead.
Look, nobody knows what's happening except her. So, mind your business. That's all I have to say.
Fair enough.
You know, all those people... Because also, I think the tabloids in, you know, in different countries can also take stories and twist them and make them very bad. So, you know, don't fuck with, you know, the public eye.
Fair enough, bro. I honestly, I don't know why I put it on the dock. It's very, like, I try to stay away from, like, salacious, you know, gossip and stuff, but I just thought this was fun, you know?
Well, it's just weird, like, you know, they said some things are going to happen, and then something else, you know, I don't know, people come up with extra theories. But anyway, that was an interesting story.
The next story is the TikTok ban. Have you heard about this?
No. Are they trying to get rid of TikTok?
Only in America.
Oh.
So they've been having congressional hearings. So TikTok is a singer. Actually, I don't know if it's from China, but their CEO is from Singapore. And they kept on, like, grilling this man, and they're like... So why are you serving Chinese propaganda to the American people? And he's like, I'm from Singapore. I have no relation with Chinese China. People. I'm not a member of the CCP, which is the Chinese Communist Party. Mm. He was just like having to feel these rubbish questions. Mm. Right? And then, are you familiar with Ted Cruz?
Yeah, I might have heard of him.
Yeah, Ted Cruz is just an insane senator from Texas, right? Yeah. And he kind of gives the game away, right? He says something to the effect of, okay, in China, you're serving them content about maths and science.
Mm.
But in America, you're serving them information on being anti-Israel.
Mm.
And it's like, okay, there it is, right? Mm. You're angry because TikTok is, you know, showing anti-Israel content to people, which is not true, right? Mm. TikTok is 100% based on the algorithm, right?
That's what I was thinking about. Yes. Whatever you see is because you searched those things, bro.
Yes, you searched it, you clicked on it. The more time you spend, like, watching something, the more information TikTok has to be like, okay, let's find more content like that.
Mm.
So, it's totally just, like, adults not understanding what TikTok is.
Yeah.
You know, a few weeks ago, I wrote a post on Instagram about TikTok and how rubbish TikTok is.
Mm.
And that was just kind of in jest, right?
Mm.
But I was saying that because I've started using TikTok to post, you know, clips from the show on TikTok.
Mm.
And we're getting a lot of, like, traction there.
Mm.
It's much, it's easier to be seen on TikTok than it is on YouTube, etc., etc. There's over 100 million American users of TikTok, right?
Jeez.
That would be like banning Toyota.
Mm.
You know, that's the scale of the user base that we're talking about.
To be honest, you know, they could ban it, but it's not like they'll have any less users. And people will find other ways to use it, you know?
No, but I mean, so like what I mentioned here, I'm posting clips from our podcast. There's people who their entire business is based around TikTok, right?
Yeah,
like they like sell
merchandise,
etc., whatever. So that would be a huge fuck you to, you know, the people in America that are using TikTok as
and
a service.
And the ones who came up with lots of those stupid ass things, you know. So you guys are the inventors also.
Well,
of these.
That's the thing, you know. It's it'll go away. I'm very interested to see what a platform with no American users look like.
Mm.
Like, that would be very strange.
It'll be nice for the rest of us,
yes.
I think. But who knows?
Enough
sure.
of their insane bullshit. It's just, yeah.
That's some science, baby. Here we come.
All right. Do you have anything else to say on that?
Nah, I'm good.
So can we get into the context of the movie?
Yes.
So this movie is directed by Peter Farrelly, or Farrelly.
Mm. Whatever.
I've always
His
just said
name
Farrelly.
Is Pete.
Right.
His name is Pete.
For many years worked along with his brother Bobby as the Farrelly brothers.
Mm.
And they made a bunch of like romantic comedies like Dumb and Dumber, There's Something About Mary, Shallow Hell. Have you seen any of these?
Yeah.
Definitely like when I was a child, well, I was like 10 years old in 2007, right?
Mm.
On Mnet, they had a back-to-back of Shallow Hell and The Heartbreak Kid, two Farrelly Brothers movies.
Mm.
And that's the one of the, like...
Best movie nights ever.
Not really, I'm saying my interaction with the Farrellys.
Mm.
That's the most I've ever
interacted
with them. I'm familiar with them, but I'm not like a big fan, you know. I'm like, I didn't rub my hands together and think, ooh, the new Peter Farrelly movie, ooh. Right. I haven't been able to find a reason why, but he split up with his brother and starts working as a solo director.
Mm.
And he makes Green Book in 2018.
That was a very good movie.
To me, it was an all right movie.
All right.
But it won the Oscar for Best Picture, which it definitely did not deserve, right? It's going to be one of those that we look back in years to come and be deeply embarrassed by.
How what are they saying was the best picture? But it's just like the way the movie looks? Or the whole story? Or
I don't know what goes through the mind of the Oscars.
For the best picture, I mean, the award.
It can be anything. You could be like, oh, I like the writing in this movie. I'll give it Best Picture. Just the...
Okay.
The Oscar voters, they vote how they vote, you know.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't tell you. In fact, we're going to be doing an Oscar segment just now, and you'll see, like, certain things are just a little bit strange. I wouldn't have voted that way, but, you know.
Sure.
The Oscars are the Oscars, right? He then directs a movie called The Greatest Beer Run Ever, which I haven't seen, so I can't comment on it. Have you seen it?
Nope.
And then after that is the movie that we're covering today.
Yeah. But today is only one brother.
It's yes. So that's what I was saying. Great Book was by Peter, and The Greatest Beer Run Ever is by Peter, and this one is by Peter. This is his solo career so far.
So okay. Not too bad then. This movie, I think, was pretty good.
So, yeah, you love, not love, but like you like at least two out of the three that he's done solo, right?
Yeah.
Green Book and this.
Yeah.
So maybe you should try The Greatest Beer Run Ever and see.
I'll let you know. I'll let you know if it's the greatest ever.
Zac Efron is also in The Greatest Beer Run Ever.
Oh, so maybe this guy's friends with Zac.
I was going to, like, speak you off. I haven't done a Zac Efron movie on this podcast. Yeah, and then in the past few weeks, we've done two now.
Yeah, he's coming in.
Yes. He's a good actor. You know, like, a lot of, like, people that come from weird, or not weird, like, musical theater, I kind of look down upon a little bit. And he's, you know...
He's got good range.
He started from High School Musical. Yeah, at least that's where I know him from, first of all. So, yes, he's very good at comedies, but... When we saw him in The Iron Claw, I thought he was very good as a dramatic actor as well, right? So, yeah.
He's got good versatility.
Okay.
But I don't think this was only about Zac, you know. I just like the whole movie in general.
Yes.
You know, no, the way it was.
I was just talking about him because he was in the previous movie, so I wanted to mention him.
All right.
Right? What else? Okay, just before I start, I also want to talk about the actors. John Cena... This is his 8th movie in 2 years.
Hey, John Cena's on fire, boy. Bro, he's trying to be the highest paid actor. He's right there. He's gunning for Dwayne Johnson's position.
So, I was looking at his Wikipedia in his filmography. So, one of those 6 movies last year was Barbie, which was just a small cameo.
Yeah.
But, like, 4 of them were the main role. How is this guy doing 4 main roles? And then... Early on this year, another one with this Ricky Stenicki. So he is out of control. Somebody needs to rein him in.
He's on fire, dog.
He must have, like, gambling debts that he needs to pay
off. Bro, so that's what I'm saying, dog. He's trying to get The Rock's career there. He's trying to catch it up there quick, fast.
And I just want to say, I think John Cena is a far better actor than The Rock. I don't think I've said that on this podcast.
You like John Cena more?
Yeah. Well, I've definitely more. I think he's way funnier. The Rock, like, the jokes about The Rock is like, oh my god, he's so big. That's supposed to be a joke. It's like,
Well, I think for The Rock, he's got that very big Maui seriousness about him. And, you know, that works in some roles, especially like when he's Fast and Furious-ing.
He's an actor. He's supposed to have range, you know.
Yeah.
He can't do the same
thing. What I like about his range doesn't only go into physical character, because he was also, like, doing Moana, you know. He does voice recording, so I think that's pretty good. But I like both of them. I feel you. I don't know. For me, it's a bit hard to decide, because John Cena, he always comes with, like, he tries to be serious, but I can see he's like a fluffy cushion, you know. That's the only word that comes to mind. He's like a fluffy cushion. Because in every movie, he starts out serious, and then at the end of the movie, I just end up laughing at him because he's so silly, you know.
Fair enough. What about the other two friends? The ginger friend and the black friend.
I think there were decent supporting actors. You know, nothing extravagant about them. That one ginger friend, him and his lifestyle were, like, funny. Yeah. Hey, I don't know. What do you think, bro?
I thought... Okay, we'll get into it in my thoughts of the movie. Just in terms of acting, I could take or leave both of them. They weren't, like, standout, you know.
Mm. It was nice to have some other characters.
Yes.
So I wouldn't leave them, but they were fine as they were.
All right, yes. Mm. So let's get into my thoughts for the movie. Mm. All right, well, our thoughts.
Mm.
So the acting in this movie is poor. Sorry. I just didn't like it, right?
Oh.
We just saw Zac Efron and the Iron Claw do so much better than this, right?
Mm.
And I understand the different performances. That's a dramatic and this is a comedic, but the level of the performance, I still think, is way different, right? I didn't believe that he was abused as a child. There's nothing in his performance that conveys it, right?
I would say overtly, but after, like, you know, you come to realize his past and why he lies, that was the only scene that where that black friend was useful, you know. He gave exposition. Gave it to him straight, yeah. He was like, yo, this is not right what you're doing. You can't keep carrying on like this. So after that, I then realized a little bit later, but maybe before that, you know, there's nothing so standoff or obvious that...
Yes. But my problem is that they just told it to us. They were just like, look, this guy was abused. If we saw some things like he can't control his temper because that's how he was raised, or...
some other signs and symbols.
So, do you know when they're at the bris, the black guy says that he takes these drugs and he puts him in a something, I can't remember what word
like
he used.
Like a sleep,
right? If Zac Efron was the one doing that, I would be like, oh, that makes more sense because he's like, he's too fucked up. He struggles to, you know, maintain his sanity because of how badly he was abused. That would, like, make more sense to me. But, like, he seems very well-adjusted. The only thing is that he lies. But then his other two friends also lie, and they both weren't abused.
That's the thing, you know. The ginger friend, I think, he also just feeds into this lie. I'm not sure why and whatever his reason is. But the black friend at least knows that, hey, man, this lying is not for me. I'm not the one who said... From the beginning, I just wanted to tell the truth. So I appreciate that about it.
That line that he said was just about hiring Ricky Stenicki.
Everything in general. But I mean,
they've been lying since they were children.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, Zac Efron, they say he lies explicitly because he was abused. The other two weren't abused. So what is their... You know, if they told us, like, okay, this guy, he thought he wouldn't get love from his parents if he didn't lie or something like, give us a reason why the other two are liars.
Well, like you said, you can take them or leave them. So
yes,
do we really need their whole life story? We want to talk about Ricky and
I could take or leave them is because nothing of interest was done with them. If they did, you know... If they were more fleshed out characters, then I would be like, oh, that's a good side character. But both of them were just kind of whatever. Right.
For sure.
The only person who comes to play was John Cena. Right. He comes in with so much charisma and commits so hard to the bit, you can't help but be won over by him.
Yeah.
Because in the movie itself, people are being won over by him. And we as the audience are also being won over because that transformation from when he's like an alcoholic to late in the movie when he, you know, comes through at the bris with his cowboy hat.
For sure, bro. And he did his research, you know. You can see he's really dedicated. He had an answer for everybody.
Yes.
So I also like that about him. He was fully committed to the role.
Yes. So he's the only one who is the standout in this movie. Even William H. Macy, the boss, was just kind of bro. So yes, the acting in this movie.
Fucking, what's his name
in Shameless? I think his name is Frank.
Frank, yeah. I was like, Frank is doing the same thing, cleaning up his act.
I kind of fell off Shameless like in season 6, and I think it still went on for another like 3 or 4 years. But
I
need to go back and and see what it's about.
Let me know if you get those last few.
I didn't enjoy a lot of humor in this movie, especially John Cena's porn parody songs, which, it's, like, in theory, I should find it funny, but the way
well,
it
was, you know, the person who served him the notice to say that, you know, you should stop using my song, he also apparently didn't find it funny.
Yeah. Billy Ocean.
Yeah, so, yeah. I don't know. I won't say that it was like a chuckles funny film, but I was smiling the entire film.
Yes, that's like, the thing. I chuckled a few times, right? But not enough for a comedy movie. It should be way funnier for a... I guess it's not their fault that the comedy didn't jive with me. Maybe there's people out there who, you know, loved it and they thought it was so funny. So I shouldn't say that. I'll just say for me, I didn't laugh too much. It reminded me a lot of like a mid-2000s raunchy comedy where they do like a lot of sex jokes. Like old school or Wedding Crashers. Yes.
That's true. But I guess if you look at this guy's discography or biography,
filmography,
you know, it shows all these, like, the type of movies he's made. And he likes to make those sort of
raunchy comedies.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he was working with Bad Neighbors too, with Zac Efron and Seth Rogen, you know.
I something don't think
like.
He was,
well, but, I'm just saying, of that, like, sort of line, you know.
Yes. Fair enough. I thought the cinematography was boring. There's no cool or interesting shots. Everything in this movie is filmed in the exact same way and it feels quite lazy. So we saw with Dune, they make use of like a lot of like interesting the cuts visuals, and like they take time to make the visuals. And I understand this is a way different type of movie. It's just a comedy. But why not do like you know, when there's a physical scene, put like a GoPro on John Cena's face or something and like you see it from his perspective or like, you know, switch it up so that there's something interesting for us to see, right? There's no whimsy being conveyed in a comedy. That's not the main thing, but one of the important things is that you, it's not too serious. You don't get like bogged down. You just like have a bit of fun with it.
I think I understand what you're saying, but if you're saying that, I'm thinking of that scene where they were fighting in the closet, Zac Efron and John Cena, and they were like, you know, being real catty and their faces were getting red, and you know, so it's not exactly, I understand what you mean, they don't have the nice wide variety of the different shots and they're not making the best use of everything. But I think for what they were intending to achieve, they achieved it, and you know, they wanted to make a comedy nice and simple. So I appreciated that about the movie. I don't always want to see, you know, like close-up face shots and things. Sometimes I want to just feel like I'm watching a movie.
Sure, that's fine. The movie is almost 2 hours, and I kept checking my watch to see how much longer it was going to be. So this to me suggests that there's an editing and a pacing issue. You know Killers of the Flower Moon?
Yeah.
It's 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
I didn't check my watch once because the editing is so like engrossing, you know, like one scene ends and the
next one was there.
It's not about just being there. It flows into each other. So, like, you don't even think, like, okay, this scene is done. How much longer? It just, like, it just moves at such a clip. This was, like, half the length of Killers of the Flower Moon, and I just kept checking my watch, like, how much longer? Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, again, 2 hours wasn't... It's far too much time for this movie. Cut out 20 minutes. Give us a tight 90. In terms of character, I felt like the ginger guy added nothing to the plot of the movie, right?
I think he was like an anchor just on a ship, you know, waiting to set sail and drop. Because it's like his life was the most fucked up, and he was the one who was just going along with all these lives. I mean, they were slipping his baby's penis, you know. Everything kind of involved him some way or another.
People have circumcisions. That's not the issue.
Yeah, but the way they're doing it, like I'm saying, it was his child that was affected, you know.
Yeah.
In the situation, you know, it's him and Zac Efron's job.
Sorry, now that you just remind me, I just want to go back to the humor. They were making a lot of jokes about the baby's penis, which was so odd. And I was like, Okay.
Where they're choosing to pull their inspiration for the jokes is a bit odd. I'll give them that. Even some of, like you said, some of the dick parody jokes, they are a little bit funny, you know, but funny in like a funky way, not like a bad way or a good way. It's just a bit funky.
So, again, I don't think they should get rid of the ginger guy because a trio works better than just two guys, a duo. So, I think... just rewrite that character. Give him something interesting. Like, I guess you could say he's the guy with the baby. Which...
That's why I'm saying, you know, everything that kind of happened, it was involving him. And even in the last scene that you see, he's the last person that you see standing outside, waving at his baby. He's outside brushing his teeth, you know.
Yeah.
He's capping outside, so... as much as he didn't have a major role, he had some weight, you know, in the movie.
I guess it's like a house party. It's his house, but like a... he's not really participating while everyone else is having fun.
For sure.
And John Cena is just the life of the party. He's the
For sure. That's a nice way of seeing it, yeah.
Yeah. So this is quite obviously a movie about accountability. The three friends as well as John Cena have been avoiding accountability their entire lives. And the movie is about learning to take accountability, which I think is a good lesson for people to learn.
For sure.
But a lot of stuff on social media is like, well, it's kind of like a battle of the sexes thing. Men are always like, wow, women never take accountability. And women are like, men never take accountability. Right? So I think this is a very good... moral for, and doesn't matter if it's men, whoever, you know, can take a lesson from this movie about accountability.
For sure.
Yes. Well, that's the end of my thoughts. Do you have any other thoughts?
No. Like, to be honest, I quite enjoyed the movie. I didn't look at my watch, you know, in terms of I want to know when the movie is going to end.
That's fine. That was just me.
I don't think there was anything wrong with it. Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. Like I said, I was smiling throughout the movie. I won't say I chuckled a few times. You know, I didn't feel overwhelmed with emotional or anything like that. But overall, I think it was pretty good. I want to say I'd give it a 6, but I'm going to say I'll give it a 7 just because, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I'm somewhere between a 5 and a 6. I thought it was fun. It was good, but like, just it's missing so much, you know, like... there's been a lot of good comedies. Like I'm thinking about No Hard Feelings. Have you seen that with Jennifer Lawrence?
Right? Yeah.
I nominated Jennifer Lawrence for my best actress last year based on that, because that's such a funny movie. Even though it's raunchy as well, there's a lot of sex jokes. There's a lot of like you know, weird stuff going on. But but that movie is just so much funnier than than this. So yeah. Are we done yet?
Yeah, what would you give it though? Five or six?
I can't decide. You know, sometimes you can't.
Fine.
Like,
anyway, maybe, it's okay. It's
maybe
okay.
Tomorrow morning I wake up and I'm like, oh, I'll give it a 5. Then, like, a week from now I wake up and I'm like, oh, it was too harsh, I'll give it a 6. My ratings are always like nebulous, they never set in stone. Like, I might, in 2 or 3 years, I may watch a movie and be like, oh shit, I didn't understand this the first time I watched it. Let me bump it up. Like, I'm always...
well, I'm sure that if you watch this movie again in a year or two, you'll enjoy it. Because even now, while I'm watching it, I was like, yo, I'm telling my girlfriend, babe, we gotta watch this movie together. You know, I'll watch it with you even. So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
But to be honest, for the week ahead, I was also enjoying some other things. I would recommend The Good Cop. Oh, so...
so we get into the recommendations this week.
For this week, I would recommend The Good Cop. I enjoyed it quite a bit, you know.
Is this the same one that you've been talking about? Oh, no. Sorry, that's The Rookie.
Yeah.
The Good Cop is something different.
Yeah, for sure. So this one is like a weird character. He's like a very stiff, to the book type of guy. And his father is a very loose and fast type of character. So there's two very opposing characters, and they live together and they work, you know, and he works in the department, and they solve cases, and just weird things always happening, you know, to them, and each day they're solving a case, so it's pretty interesting, and yeah, I enjoyed that one. I also watched some anime,
You want to tell us the name of that?
I'm thinking about it. But right now I'm watching Helsing. Helsing is, it's okay. I'm thinking more about going into Yasuki, the Black Samurai. Yeah, just, I thought it would be more exciting. But I don't know much about anime, so I'm open to some suggestions if anybody wants to share some. I've also added One Piece Man to my...
There's One Piece and there's One Punch Man.
No, One Piece, yeah.
Okay.
One Piece, the live action one, because someone told me that the live action one is nice to start with.
Bro, listen.
What?
One Piece has like over 1,000 episodes.
Yeah, so, right. That's a bit overwhelming for me.
My friend told me the exact same thing. He's like, the
live action.
The live action, the 10 episodes of the live action summarizes like 100 episodes of the...
Of the... That'll do me a solid, yes. Bro. So I think I'll try that out. But what are the recommendations you got for this?
So for me, Invincible returned from its mid-season break this week, and it's still really, really excellent.
Mm.
Have you seen Invincible?
No, I have not.
It's a superhero show about like it's an evil Superman narrative.
Mm.
So his dad is like an evil Superman.
Okay.
Instead of coming to Earth to save Earth, he's come to Earth to conquer Earth. Right. And somewhere along the way, he fell in love with a lady and had a son. Which is Invincible. And they're kind of building towards a fight between him and his father. So yeah, very excellent show. That's just a top level synopsis I've given you. That's not really
I feel you. It's probably got more depth to it,
but I'm really excited to see where they take us in the remaining episodes of the season. I believe the comic ran for a long time, so there's gonna be more seasons. But yes, excellent show. One of my favorites on TV right now. Definitely think you should watch it.
Sure.
Have you seen The Boys?
The Boys?
It's a TV show as well.
No.
That is top tier. Watch The Boys before you watch Invincible.
Mm.
Let's just watch The Boys right now.
Look, I was also watching Young Sheldon. I'm waiting. I gotta be honest. There's like... three things that I'm watching every week. I just wait until they come out, and you know, Young Sheldon is one of them, The Rookie, and then Fire Country. So I watched Fire Country. That's why it's pretty interesting. That guy, he's a prisoner, and then he goes to a fire camp where he works to save people's lives in the fire. But literally every episode, this guy saves someone else's life. But he's still in prison. Nobody wants to see the good in it. So it's pretty, you know, a stupid story like that. But yeah, Young Sheldon is nice to watch these kids growing up. And I really hope that they continue making like a Young Sheldon, a Teen Sheldon. They must make an adult Sheldon.
An adult Sheldon.
Yeah.
I think that's called the Big Bang Theory.
Nah, that's with all of them. This must only be Sheldon.
Life do you think he has, bro?
Because that's the thing. I feel like as the characters are growing up, they can have a sort of lifetime role.
Teenage Sheldon.
Yeah. Because now he's hit puberty, so obviously he's going to grow faster. So they could accelerate puberty, and then they could have a teen Sheldon. And then the original Young Sheldon, what's his name?
Jim Parsons.
Yeah, Jim Parsons.
He plays him in The Big Bang.
Yeah. Jim Parsons. He looked like a baby already, so they just smooth shave his face. And he can carry on. Yeah, he can carry on. He can be like from when they meet like with Leonard and things like that, you know.
That guy's in his like 50s now.
Oh.
He really does have a baby face because like...
Shit, dude. I would never have thought, man. Yeah. In his 50s?
Well, let's just Google that after we're done here, because I do believe he's quite old.
Damn, yeah. That's pretty good.
Anyway, back to recommendations.
What are the recommendations?
While you were recommending...
Yeah, Big Bang.
Weren't Young recommending, Sheldon. You were more like pitching a Teenage Sheldon TV show to all the executives listening.
Thank you.
So next in the blank check, John McTiernan miniseries, we have Medicine Man, which is an environmental movie. It's kind of a weird mix between The English Patient and Indiana Jones, but the boring and uninteresting parts of those movies. That being said, it had a charm to it, and I liked it more than The Hunt for Red October, which was the previous John McTiernan movie. Mm. I gave this movie a 6.
Okay.
So like, again, it's a bad movie. I wanna put that out there. But I found it charming, but a little bit silly in a lot of places.
Mm.
But ultimately, like a very 90s movie.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway. Then I rewatched June 2 this week, which is not really a recommendation. It's just to let you know. you can listen to our episode on it for my full review. Mm. But again, my favorite part is when Silga says, "Mahdi, you have to kill me. It's the only way." And Paul shouts, "I'm pointing the way." Which, bro, love it. I love June. Nice. Anyway, the other scene I love is at the end when he's like, "The great houses won't accept your ascendancy."
Mm.
And he's like, "Lead them to paradise."
Yes, bro. I don't know where's paradise.
Lead them to paradise. I don't know if I want to go check them out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Can we get into the Oscars segment?
Tell me about the Oscars.
So we're just gonna go through like the big categories. So.
Mm.
And then just give some opinions, right?
Okay.
So we have...
Leading roles.
Actor in leading roles. So I'm just going to call them best actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have Cillian Murphy, Bradley Cooper... Oh, yeah, I should say. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer.
Cool.
Bradley Cooper for Maestro.
Okay.
Colman Domingo for Rustin.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction.
Okay.
Very strong category.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually...
So the winner is Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
And the other people are just nominees.
Yes.
All right. I get you.
Personally, I think Cillian Murphy should have won.
Mm.
But it's kind of like an 8 out of 10 performance.
Mm.
It didn't like blow my shit, you know.
Mm.
It wasn't like that 10 where I'm like, oh, fuck, this is a lock. It was like, it was good. I'm glad he won.
Mm.
The other actors in this category, so... Bradley Cooper, I think, deserves nothing.
To be honest, I didn't finish watching Maestro,
yeah.
But when I started, I was like, why is this movie black and white? What the fuck is going on? Then I realized this guy's got old and now it's in color.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I wasn't sure if this is Bradley Cooper in the beginning.
Mm.
Now I'm a bit more sure. So I think he came with a big variation to what he normally does.
Well, that's not my issue. Mm. Like, I'm always saying, hey, you should try something different if you're not an actor.
I didn't hear you say that to me.
Are you an actor? What are you acting
in? I'm acting in this life, man.
All right. So Bradley Cooper, I thought, was just horribly overacting in this movie.
A bit much?
Yes, it was a bit much.
Mm. Just a tad.
I don't even think he deserved to be nominated.
All right.
I'm glad he lost.
Sure,
more
sure.
than I'm glad Cillian Murphy won, I'm glad Bradley Cooper lost. he should have not been here, right?
All right.
Colman Domingo, I can't speak about him. I have not seen Rustin.
Mm.
Rustin didn't come out in theaters here, and it's not on streaming anywhere, so I can't compare. But I've heard good things. Well, obviously, I've heard good things because he was nominated.
Mm.
But yeah. Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. It's a very sweet, heartwarming movie, and he kind of carries it. Actually, it's more about him and the interplay between one of his students.
Mm.
I don't think you watched this, right?
Mm-mm.
So, he's a history teacher at a private school, and everyone goes home for the holidays except for this one boy, and him and the boy have to kind of like keep each other company during that time. And it's not just Giamatti, it's the interplay between those two characters that's so interesting.
Mm.
I would actually even say that the boy outacted him. but yeah, it's actually a very good movie about COVID.
Mm.
It's not about COVID, like I said, but you know that feeling, that feeling of being indoors and like being isolated from the outside world, that it had a very COVID type feel about it.
Mm.
So... yes, The Holdovers. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Mm, okay.
Jeffrey Wright, we covered American Fiction a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly to Paul Giamatti, I thought they were both like 7 out of 10 performances. They were both very good. They both led their movies very well, but...
Not as an Oppenheimer in there. industry.
Yeah, but again, I wasn't even that impressed with Oppenheimer. I mean, Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer. So I was kind of mixed on this category. Any one of Cillian Murphy, Giamatti, or Jeffrey Wright winning would have been totally fine with me.
Is does Oppenheimer smoke?
He does. He smokes a lot.
I think the problem with Cillian Murphy is if I can see him in a movie where he doesn't smoke and like make smoking look cool, then I'll think about him as a real actor. For now, I can't imagine him without a cigarette, you know. And the way that he makes the cigarette look, it's like, no, bro, you have no right to make smoking look that cool.
I think that would be a point in his favor, don't you think?
No, that's the problem. That's what I'm saying. He needs to change. Because, like, imagine if you were to dress up as Oppenheimer, how would you dress up? Mm. And how are you going to include a cigarette? You need to include it, you know.
Nothing wrong with a cigarette.
Yeah, but not kids. Kids are Halloween.
But listen, you tell me. Hold on, let me just get you there, right? Which kid is watching Oppenheimer and they're like, oh, I want to be Oppenheimer?
What's the age restriction on 18. Oppenheimer? Okay, never mind. No kids are watching
Oppenheimer. But even if it wasn't 18, right? Mm. Which kid is watching a movie like this that's 3 hours and it's about the atom bomb?
Maybe I'm an interesting parent. I would let my kid watch it, you know.
Well, that's the thing. When I was a child, I would have watched Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
But how many children are like I was as a child?
That's the problem.
And if I were a child, I wouldn't like be drawn to Oppenheimer. I would have liked like somebody silly like Einstein, who's his hat blows away.
Alright, fair enough.
Yes. My winner for this would have been Nicolas Cage in Dream Scenario, which he wasn't nominated, unfortunately, but I was a big fan of that.
Okay.
Actor in a supporting role. So, winner, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
Mm.
Other nominees, Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction. Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm. Ryan Gosling, Barbie. Mark Ruffalo, Poor Things. Now, this is a stacked category.
Mm.
This is much harder than Best Actor. So
who was giving the best support?
So for me, Downey was the best actor, the best supporting actor of last year. Like as I was watching that movie, I'm watching an Oscar performance go out in front of me, right?
Mm.
Downey, I give like a 10 out of 10. Mm. He was so excellent in this movie. It's outstanding, sure. Right?
Mm.
We covered American Fiction 2 weeks ago. Not even 2 weeks ago. It was last week, right? I didn't think Sterling K. Brown was that outstanding. He was interesting. He was a good performance. But like Jeffrey Wright just shat all over it. If I'm being honest, for right? Sure. De Niro, I also loved in Killers of the Flower Moon. He, if not Downey, I would have had De Niro win. They were the two standout performances. Not just in supporting actor, just the two outstanding performances of the entire year. It's unfortunate that they were in the same category because, you know,
hard to compete. Yeah.
Yes, you could argue that Robert De Niro, you could shift him to main character and run. But you know, anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Right. Gosling in Barbie, I think, was good, but not Oscar-worthy.
Yeah, not Oscar-worthy, but I just think it's important that he be mentioned as a supporting actor, because if that movie was only about Barbie, I don't think I would have enjoyed it, you know. You need some other character to break up the...
Ken is important in the Barbie universe.
Yeah, I wasn't so sure about that, and I don't think was sure about that.
It's like,
so I'm glad that me and Ken we're able to clear it up.
It's like making a Superman movie without Lois Lane. You know, it's she's an integral part to the thing. In the same way, Ken is an integral part to Barbie. But yes, I thought Ryan Gosling was the best part of the Barbie movie.
Oh, yeah.
But still not Oscar-worthy, in my opinion. That was like a 7 or 8 out of 10. But yeah.
And what about Mark Ruffalo?
I love Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Actually, I was kind of, now that I'm thinking about my review, I was kind of mixed on him. I actually enjoyed, who's the guy who plays the Green Goblin?
Defoe.
Willem Dafoe. Dafoe was much better than Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things, if you watch that movie. He, Dafoe is just has this magnetic, like, you kind of like drawn to him much more than Mark Ruffalo. But, you know, Ruffalo is good. So, yeah, like I said, very stacked category. But yes, I do believe Downey was the best performer last year.
For sure.
And just the narrative around it, you know. Okay, you can just go listen to our Oppenheimer episode 4. The full breakdown. The details, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to get this done.
Let's see. What about actresses?
Lead actress. So the winner was Emma Stone in Poor Things, Annette Bening in Naiad, Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro. Now, this was also the talking point after the Oscars was that Lily Gladstone was snubbed. People thought that she would be the first Native American woman to win an Oscar in a leading role. Not, you know, both man and woman. And she didn't, unfortunately. Personally, I don't think it's a snub. You can listen to our Killers of the Flower Moon episode, but I thought she was deserving of a nomination, but I didn't think she should win. The person I thought should have won was Carey Mulligan in Maestro. Carey Mulligan, you know, I just said Bradley Cooper's horrifically overacting. Carey Mulligan is the exact right kind of, I don't want to say like temperature, you know, like, you know, when the water's not too hot, too cool, it's just right. That's Carey Mulligan in Maestro. Truly, I believe she should have won this category, but I'm not mad at Emma Stone. So, like, I'd give Carey Mulligan a 9, Emma Stone an 8, and Lily Gladstone a 7. So it's like Emma Stone is better than Killers of the Flower and better than Lily Gladstone, but I still wouldn't have given it to her. Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall, fantastic. She, we were speaking about this last week, not on the pod, but just in our real lives, you know. Imagine that, having a conversation not on mic. But yes, she is fantastic, and she speaks in both French and English, and I think a little bit of German in this movie. So incredible. Annette Bening in Naiad, I haven't seen, so I can't talk about. But yes, I really enjoyed Emma Stone in Poor Things. She's a worthy winner. Yeah, that's really all I have to say.
Because
this was more like an 8.5, not 8. So I should bump it up to a 10. I mean, to a 9, sorry. But yeah. Actress in a supporting role. The winner, Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers. Nominees, Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferreira for Barbie, Jodie Foster for Naiad. To me, this was the worst category in the big ones, right?
No, so good supporting roles, yeah.
So Divine Joy Randolph, I didn't really think she was like popped at all in The Holdovers. I don't even think she should have been nominated, and she won. So yeah, there's that. Emily Blunt has so little screen time in Oppenheimer, she definitely should not have been nominated. Danielle Brooks and The Color Purple, I haven't seen, so I can't comment on it. America Ferreira was the worst performance in Barbie. Look, she has this monologue, right? And you can go listen to our Barbie episode, but that thing irritated the shit out of me. Both the actual monologue of what she was saying, which was just gibberish, and her performance when she was delivering that monologue was awful as well. So in the same way, I just wanted Bradley Cooper to lose Best Actor, I wanted her to lose Best Supporting, right? Jodie Foster and Naiad I haven't seen as well, so can't talk about it. All in all, just a very poor
selection.
Yes. So I would have actually had Patti LuPone in Bo is Afraid win this category, but again, unfortunately not nominated, so it is what it is. Animated feature film,
I've only
seen two of them, so I can't really speak about this. Mm. Do you want to just move on? Mm. Have you seen any of these?
No.
Well, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
I assume. Now, cinematography.
Mm.
The winner, Oppenheimer.
Mm.
Hoyt van Hoytema. El Conde by Edward Lachman. Killers of the Flower Moon, Rodrigo Prieto. Maestro, Matthew Libatique. Poor Things, Robbie Ryan. And 1,000,000%. Well, not 1,000,000%, but like it's a tight shootout between Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon. Because they're both,
I'd imagine so, yeah.
They're both like in the desert, and they have these wide vistas of like just looking at gorgeous views, and like yeah, that's about it.
Mm.
It's, and what is Oppenheimer about? It's like a lot of guys in rooms having meetings and stuff.
Mm.
And the cinematography was still so interesting.
Mm.
You get what I... You know...
Mm. That's a high standard too.
Yes.
Mm.
You know, I was saying... Yes, I understand it's a comedy for the Ricky Stenicki that we just covered now, right? Even though it's a comedy, you can still do interesting things with the camera.
Mm.
You can still... Like, keep us interested in your movie. You don't have to do it so... Like... weird.
That's true.
I mean, the opposite of weird. Not weird.
Boring and plain.
Boring. Yes. Costume design. We have Poor Things, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer. This is another stack category. Right? Poor Things is kind of set in a alternate history 1930s where there's like lots of technology from the modern day, and it's supposedly the 1930s and you know, imagining this fantasy world was very interesting. I mean, obviously the people who created it, you know, I thought it was a very creative costume choices, and like you know, like what would people in this world wear. But honestly, this is a very, very stacked category, because Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, they're all historical epics.
Yeah.
So they all have like clothes from like between 50 and 200 years ago. So you know, you have to have sharp people to be like, okay, this is what it looked like then, this is, you know, doing stuff like that. Barbie also a deserving winner.
Yeah, I would think so, because Barbie has so many people to dress up. These other movies, it feels like you only have a main character to dress up.
Yeah,
and
but
everybody else can wear whatever.
It's not about most costumes, it's the design of those costumes.
Yeah, so I'm just talking about like the design in general, like who designs the best, most costumes, not only a few costumes. So I would imagine Barbie had a pretty good run, because they had to design good costumes, but many of them. These people, the Poor Things and... you know, Oppenheimer, they only have to focus on a few characters and make sure that those characters have the best costumes.
Right. Well, let's just agree to disagree. I think Barbie would have been a deserving winner, but I don't think it's better than... You know, they're all very, like, at a good level. They're all, like, 8 out of 10 and higher. So I wouldn't...
Sure.
I couldn't really...
All right. No problem.
Then, next is directing, which I'm going to skip. Because I believe directing and best picture should go hand in hand. Like, how do
you... That makes sense, yeah.
Because, well, the thing that they say is best picture is for the producers, best director is for the director. But why not wrap it up into one award?
Who won the director? Oppenheimer?
Christopher Nolan, yes, for Oppenheimer.
Okay.
Which was also the best picture winner. But yes,
so that makes sense, yeah.
Billy Crystal made a joke at the Oscars in the 90s. He was like, how can this win Best Picture and the director not be nominated? Do you think the picture directed itself? You know, like, similarly, I don't think the director and...
they should be separate.
They should be together. Our next thing is documentary feature film, which I have not seen any of them. Have you?
No.
Yeah, because fuck all this, if I'm being honest with you.
I mean... Documentary is fun and all, but I didn't see any of these.
I enjoy a nice documentary, but like, something I'm interested in. Actually, I should take that back, because like, I've watched documentaries on things I'm not interested in, and they were very informative.
Yeah. To be the most interesting.
Yeah,
go up, let me see the documentary, feature film. Because I did watch a sort of documentary, but I'm not sure it was nominated here. But anyway. Mm.
Yeah. Documentary, short film, same thing. Editing.
Mm.
Oppenheimer. By Jennifer.
The winner.
Yes. Mm. So I would have had it between Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer.
Mm.
You know what I was saying earlier about, like, Oppenheimer as well, I didn't check my watch once and it was 3 hours long.
Mm.
That, it just goes to show the flow of things, you know, like the way they move into each other was very nice. So, totally deserved. I don't know, maybe I would have had Killers of the Flower Moon over Oppenheimer, but not really interested. Then, international feature film. Have you seen any of these?
No. I have not. Okay. Which one did you see?
The only one I've seen is The Zone of Interest, which was the winner. I think it's Io Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, and The Teacher's Lounge. I haven't seen any of them. I don't really want to comment on this category. That being said, the big controversy or controversial moment is that during the speech for The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer, the director, he... gave a speech about Palestine and that so his family, he's a Jew himself, and the Zone of Interest is about the Nazis, and he was saying, don't let those same atrocities happen today. People in Palestine are dying in the same way Jews were dying in the concentration camps. So people that are pro-Israel took offense to that and you know, were very upset about that. So fuck them. That's all I can say. Thank you, Jonathan Glazer, for speaking truth to power.
Yeah.
For
sure.
Makeup and hairstyling. Again, it was won by Poor Things.
We've got Golda, Maestro, and Oppenheimer. I guess Oppenheimer smells. Yeah, so.
Honestly, Maestro, maybe, because he has this giant nose.
Yeah.
A giant prosthetic nose the entire time. Yeah. Even though
and
I
they
felt
do lots of close-ups and they look right at his face.
I felt like his acting was over the top, but that facial makeup was excellent. So
yeah, for sure.
That could have been one. Oppenheimer, I don't know about.
I mean,
I guess the hairstyling, that's another thing. I'm not really...
But even then, you know, there weren't many females in that Oppenheimer setting, so to say. There were only the wives, really. And then you just have to make all the wives' hairs look the same because of this time period as well.
That takes work, you know. That's
Well, again, like you were saying earlier, it's not about how many nice hairstyles they take. It's about which one
the
looks
quality
the best.
Of the style,
Well,
Oppenheimer didn't win. It was Poor Things that won. And
so that's nice.
I guess it should have won. Honestly, I'm wondering why Barbie was nominated for this. That should have been, you know, at least in the conversation for this.
Actually, yeah, you're right, because Barbie, they do the most dressing and the most hair and makeup, too.
And it's a shame it wasn't even nominated. Okay, then music, original score. We have The Winner, Oppenheimer, by Ludwig Göransson. American Fiction, Laura Kaufman. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, John Williams. Killers of the Flower Moon, Robbie Robertson. Poor Things, Jerskine Fendricks. So, again, I'm a big Oppenheimer fan. The music as well. I've been listening to the...
score?
Yes, the score. I've been... throughout the history of this podcast, I keep saying the same thing. I've stopped listening to rap music, and I've more been listening to the scores and, like, you know, instrumentals while I do my work. And I've gotten so much play out of the Oppenheimer score. This my two, three favorite songs are "Can You Hear the Music," which is the main theme. "Meeting Kitty," which obviously when he meets his wife, but. "Meeting Kitty" is a banger. And "Quantum Physics," not "Quantum Physics," "Quantum Mechanics." Three bangers. So definitely, I believe he deserving winner.
Yeah.
Ludwig Göransson was like a I first knew about him, he was a collaborator with Childish Gambino, right? And then he, from there, he got the Black Panther. He did the score for Black Panther. And he did, what's Nolan's movie before this? Tenet. He did Tenet. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Ludwig Göransson.
He got some great work there.
Yes. So, yeah. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, I think that was a legacy nomination. John Williams is one of the best ever composers. He did Star Wars, he did the Indiana Jones movies, he did...
Just, so they just put it there because he's... Yes,
I think he's a legend. They were like, we have to nominate him. Get in here.
Did you watch the movie as a mess?
I didn't enjoy it. I gave it a 6.
Oh, man.
But... No, no, no. I take that back. I did enjoy it, but I didn't think it was that great. So I gave it a 6. I'm a much bigger fan of Indiana Jones 2, The Temple of Doom. That's my one of my favorite movies. Full stop. Never mind Indiana Jones. Killers of the Flower Moon. There's some crazy songs there, especially at the beginning when the oil breaks out of the ground. Incredible soundtrack. American Fiction and Poor Things. Neither of them. I don't think about the score in either of them. The score didn't stand out to me. I guess in Poor Things there's that violin, that girl goes kind of crazy with it. But yeah, both of those I didn't really think
should
have been, you know. The original song, music original song, I'm looking here and
Bobby is the main thing.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't remember any of these. What Was I Made For? I don't recall it in the movie. The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot. I don't watch Flaming Hot. I'm Just Ken. Okay, I remember that from the movie, but I don't enjoy it as a song. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. I haven't seen American Symphony. And A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon. I don't remember as well. So, unless that was the... It could either be the one at the beginning or the one at the end. If it's the one at the beginning, then fair enough. That's a banger. But the one at the end, no. And then finally... Oh. So, there's more categories after that.
Of course.
No, but you would think Best Picture is the last category.
Well, let it be our last.
Yes, yes. Let's just skip forward. Right? Production design. I thought this would have been a straight shootout between Poor Things and Barbie, which I think it was. Poor Things won. Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, all nominated. Honestly, I would have given it to Barbie over Poor Things. But... again, two very pretty movies, so I see why, and pretty and practical movies, so I see why Poor Things won, but personally I would have given it to Barbie.
Sure.
Animated short film, have not seen any of these, sorry. Let's move on. Live action short film.
Okay. The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar,
which we covered,
that was pretty good
last week. I think we recorded it 2 weeks ago, but it came out last week. The After, Invincible, Knights of Fortune, Red, White, and Blue are the other nominated. And the only one I've seen is The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. So
that's perfect.
Can't really speak too much about it. Let's move on. The Sound. The Zone of Interest, the winner. The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer.
I think I must watch that Mission Impossible too.
I was also kind of let down by that one, bro.
Really?
Mission Impossible 6 is the one where it's at. This number 7, it was fine. But 6, yo!
The fires, bro. And Tom Cruise, that guy must be old, I'm sure.
He's in his 60s.
Yeah.
I think he's 61.
And he's still doing the things, bro.
But he looks great. He looks like in his late 40s.
Excellent.
Anyway, but I think the Zone of Interest should have won. I'm pretty sure I told you, when you watch The Zone of Interest, watch it with like headphones and all the way up, because I'm kind of mad I missed it when it was in theaters. But yes, the sound design is so powerful. So what was I gonna say? It's not done on stereo. the sound is done in mono. So you don't know where a certain sound is coming from. So the setup for the movie, the zone of interest, is that it's a like a little bed and breakfast next door to Auschwitz, the Nazi death camp, right? So you hear sounds and you don't know if it's coming from Auschwitz or it's from something that's happening in the house. Like, you'll hear like a baby crying. Is it one of their babies that are crying, or is it like somebody at Auschwitz crying? So yeah, very interesting sound design and a worthy winner of best sound
for sure.
Visual effects winner, Godzilla Minus One,
of course.
The Crater, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, Napoleon.
How do you like Guardians of the Galaxy?
Another just disappointing movie, bro. I thought last year was a very disappointing year in terms of film. Let me take that back. In terms of blockbuster filmmaking, Indiana Jones, Guardians, Mission Impossible, Ant-Man. What's the other Marvel movie? The Marvels, The Flash, like so many things let me down last year.
All right.
I'm still thinking of something else that I can't remember right now, but
So the visual effects.
Fast X.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't like Fast X.
They must almost be done with that thing now, so they can just finish it, please. Please, Lord, just finish it.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Have you seen Godzilla Minus One?
I haven't, but I'd imagine the visual effects would be the top.
Yes, I got to see this in a theater, and it was crazy. This is not Godzilla like, you know, the we're going to see in Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, where Godzilla's a good guy. Godzilla is the villain of this. This is a Japanese movie about, like, grappling with World War II. And if you notice, like, that's been a
predominant theme.
A theme. Oppenheimer is about the creation of the bomb that ended World War II. The Zone of Interest is about Auschwitz, you know, during the Holocaust, the death camp at the Holocaust. Killers of the Flower Moon, I guess it's just after the First World War ended, so it's not really linked, but it's in that time period. Actually, no, it's not. It's like 20 years before. But there's certainly a World War II theme.
A time period written.
Yeah, so definitely Godzilla Minus One. Now, I can't really comment because I haven't seen The Crater. And I've heard very, very good things about The Crater. But the rest, in terms of the rest, I think Godzilla Minus One is definitely better than the others that...
Guardian, Mission Impossible.
Yes, and Napoleon.
Alright.
Then writing for adapted screenplay. That just means it's based on a book or something. Winner, American Fiction. Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. I don't know what Barbie is adapted from. Because, you know, like I said, it's adapted from a book. Barbie is just like a toy. How do you adapt a toy into a...
Well, that's what someone had to do. Someone was like, we need a story. We're doing Barbie. Find us a story. And someone had to hunt for a story.
So I think that's a bit of category fraud that Barbie isn't adapted. Oppenheimer, apparently it's not a good adaptation. The book is way different to what the movie is. So, you know.
So I guess that makes sense why they never won.
Yeah. Poor Things, also, I couldn't tell you.
We'd have to read these books to see the main difference.
Here's the problem. I'm illiterate. I don't know how to read. So, sure. I can't read any of these books. I can only watch the movie.
Sure. Well, we are a movie podcast, so we'll talk about the movie.
We're not going to talk about fucking books.
Yeah, that's not
fucking book club. Nerds.
Okay. That's not book club.
All right. Then writing for original screenplay. Anatomy of a Fall is the winner. The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, Past Lives. Honestly, that's a tight win. Because Past Lives is also very good. May, December is very good. The Holdover is very good. But Anatomy of a Fall, excellent movie. It's a shame that it came out this year because, you know, everything else was so strong. But honestly, I'm very interested to see what Justin Trier does next, because this was a gorgeous movie. Honestly, one of the ones you should have watched, because wow, it's just honestly such a, it's like a procedural, like a Fincher length Law and Order episode, but it's genuinely so well done. It's about a guy who falls from a window. Was he pushed? Did he commit suicide? What happened? And okay,
that sounds very interesting.
Yes. Okay, now we're done with all of that, so let's move back to Best Picture. Winner, Oppenheimer. Nominees, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest.
All right.
Now, I've watched all of these, and 1,000,000% Oppenheimer should have won. It's far and away the best movie of last year.
For sure.
Deserving win. I've had kind of a love-hate relationship with Christopher Nolan. I'm familiar with his works. So, I loved, when I was 10 years old, I loved The Dark Knight. That was the best movie I'd ever seen in my life when I watched it.
It was swag, bro.
But later in my life, I watched Heat. And it turns out, The Dark Knight is just a ripoff of Heat. Then, like, I really, really missed Inception. And his movie after that was The Dark Knight Rises, which I hated. We went to watch it together, right? Do you remember at the end when he goes, "And once you use a real name, Robin"? That pissed me off. That made me so angry. It's like, Robin is his crime fighting name. Why would you use your real name to go crime fight? But, you know, whatever. So then his next movie was Interstellar, which again, we all went to watch together. We had like, I think we were supposed to go to a party or something. And we were at your house and we were drinking. And then we went to watch that movie. And when I'm drunk, I get kind of agitated. Like, I don't want to sit still. And I just genuinely dislike that movie. And apparently it's one of the best movies of the 2010s. So
wow.
I've rewatched it several times and my opinion hasn't changed.
On Interstellar.
For quite a while I was like, yo, this Nolan guy's a fucking fraud, dog. What the fuck is going on? Why do people love him?
But maybe.
So, I've come around on him a lot. I don't really like Tenet that much. But Dunkirk and this one have totally turned me around on Nolan. So, yes, I'm a big fan now. And a lot of people... well, do you see that there's 10 nominees for Best Picture? When The Dark Knight wasn't nominated, because it used to be 5. When The Dark Knight wasn't nominated for Best Picture, there was an uproar. And they changed it to 10 because...
they added an extra couple just for them.
Just for Nolan, right?
Shit.
So, yes. I didn't think The Dark Knight should have won Best Picture. Interstellar is also a ripoff of 2001, A Space Odyssey. It's if you... have seen that movie. I was speaking with this girl a few weeks ago, right? And she was like, "Yo, Oppenheimer's gonna win." And then I'm like, "What's your favorite Nolan movie?" She's like, "Interstellar." I'm like, "Have you seen 2001, A Space Odyssey?" She's like, "No, I haven't, blah, 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 blah." So I was like,
But I don't mind, because I think when they did the Space Odyssey, maybe the technology wasn't up to par.
Yeah.
So now when they do Interstellar, I'd rather watch Interstellar than 2001. But
I would suggest,
I appreciate the influence and the general inspiration that came from 2001, A Space Odyssey, because I know it as 3001, A Laced Odyssey, which is an album by Flatbush Zombies. And yeah, it's just the funnest album ever. I enjoy it so much. So yeah.
All right. Thanks. I would suggest that you actually watch 2001 before you say that, because personally to me, every effect is held up. Nothing looks like olden days or whatever.
Okay.
It's genuinely
That's good then. Yes. I'll give it a try.
Truly one of the best movies ever made. So yeah, now I've come around on Oppenheimer, and I'm glad he's finally won his Oscar. He's a name director. Can you name directors?
Christopher Nolan.
Yes, but I mean, do you think to yourself at the beginning of the year, all right, Justin Trier is making a movie this year, right?
No.
Nolan is one of those people that you know him by name. You can be like, okay, there's a Christopher Nolan movie coming out this year. At least to me, that's in my mind. I don't know what happens to
each person. Makes sense, yeah. Some directors you will just know and you will follow.
Yes, so for quite a while I felt that Nolan was overrated, but... You know, this is the one. This is the juice. This is like...
This is the one,
right? He was in heaven when he was made. He went to heaven, consulted with God, came back, and then made Oppenheimer.
For sure.
That's how he was, so much juice.
Well, we really enjoyed Oppenheimer. I think it was a brilliant movie, too. And it definitely deserved the win. So, well done to Oppenheimer.
Well done to Oppenheimer. And Mr. Nolan.
And all the people who worked on creating that visual masterpiece.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for listening. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, give a like, etc. Importantly, it needs to be a 5-star review. Please subscribe on Patreon to listen to our movie commentaries. You can find all our links at paicip.com. That's paicip.com. Please tell a friend. Tell that friend to tell a friend. Tell a family member.
And tell your auntie also.
Well, that is a family member. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.